I'm Jeff Hayden, and you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. This week's program, Patent Law 101, features two attorneys who have been supporters of this program for a long, long time. A frequent participant in both Your Legal Rights and our Call a Lawyer feature, which returns next week, is attorney, pilot, arbitrator, patent-holding inventor, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto. Joining Ron is Myrna Schelling, at senior counsel at Carr & Farrell, LLP in Menlo Park. Myrna's practice is concentrated in the preparation, prosecution of patents, as well as patent litigation. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of our local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. Again, that number is 866-798-8255. And I'd like to start by inviting anyone who has an interest in patents, whether you developed or invented something, or simply want to know about those who did, or how to proceed, please feel free to call in. And again, our number in the studio, 415-841-4134. And with that, Myrna, Ron, let me welcome you both to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to start with the view from 10,000 feet. What can be patented?
All right. There are a number of things that can be patented. A machine, a product, a process for making something, a device, drugs, plants, ornamental designs. In order to be patented, it has to be novel and non-obvious.
So that would exclude something that maybe somebody else is already using or that we all know about?
Well, the question is, what is novel? And that means if somebody else has done it before, then it's not novel. And then there's non-obvious.
Which is basically where if you had a combination of the closest art and you came up with someone else's invention, then obviously you can't get a patent on that. So that would be obvious, and the U.S. Patent Office is not going to give you a patent on that.
And I guess the most obvious is the question I didn't ask. What is a patent?
A patent is the right to exclude others from making, using, or selling your invention. And it's something you can think of it also as a sort of a bargain between you and the government. If you tell everybody everything there is about how to make and use your invention, the government will give you for a limited period of time the right to exclude others from making, using, and selling your invention.
And typically, when someone files and obtains a patent in the U.S., the patent itself, you can make sure to have the protection in the U.S. only. So just keep that in mind, that what we're generally talking about here is U.S. patent laws. There's obviously different laws for different countries.
So what does a patent have to have as part of it?
Oh, so we normally look at a patent and say, does it show how to make and use the invention? And that means that you have to provide a very detailed description of the invention. You also have to provide some figures or drawings that will help to explain the invention. So the detailed description constantly refers to the figures, typically. And then also we have, at the end of the patent, a set of claims. And those claims provide the boundaries, shall we say, of what it is that is patented or that you're seeking protection for.
One more part of that is, of course, the abstract. And that has to be in there. That's kind of a sort of a 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 foot view of what's going to be in the patent. Though some people also use the patent as a marketing device, and they put in a bunch of keywords into the abstract to tell people or to get people to find their patent when they're doing a search.
So we seem to have ascended from 5,000, 10,000 feet. We're getting higher and higher, and we're hitting up in the nosebleeds. But I guess the salient question I have is, how do I know I need to talk to somebody? I mean, do I really need a patent?
I'm not quite sure I understand that question. You want to talk to somebody. First of all, do you need a patent? That's kind of a business decision that you have to make. Will a patent do something for you that's useful? Should you talk to somebody, meaning an attorney, about obtaining a patent for you? That's probably a pretty good idea. Now, anybody can draft their own patent application. Any inventor is allowed to draft their own patent application and file it and prosecute it. I've seen some inventors who've done a very good job at that. I've also seen some inventors who've done a very bad job at that. And I would say probably the percentage of inventors who did a very good job is a lot lower than those that did a very bad job.
Indeed. And I suppose one thing I would add to that, Ron, is that if you have an idea that you've certainly not seen out there before, you know, you can certainly write up a couple of paragraphs and talk to your patent attorney and say, hey, could you perhaps see if this is something that's out there? Do a prior art search is what we call it, just to see what is the closest art out there that an examiner could possibly use to say, hey, your invention is not novel, it's not non-obvious, so therefore I'm not going to give you a patent. So prior art search is something that you can use, you can ask your patent attorney to do to see if your invention's out there already.
You can also do your own prior art search. There are a number of different sources for that. On the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website, it's uspto.gov. They have a search engine. You have to kind of hunt around for it. You have to search for the search engine. But it will search issued patents, and it will also search patent applications. Those are two different searches, two different search engines. For whatever reason, they haven't combined them. But you can go out there and do various different searches if you know how to run search engines.
And, of course, if I don't know how to run those types of searches, then that's all the more reason to go and talk with somebody about
absolutely
my ideas. Why do people get patents?
There's a number of reasons. For one thing, businesses will want to have their intellectual property secured in some manner so that if employees leave, the intellectual property that they've developed and through R&D remains with the business. So certainly the business itself would want to have some type of property right in the form of a patent or at least a filed patent application to say, hey, competitors, we have filed a patent application on this, and that's why sometimes you see on some literature that it says patent pending. That's what it's referring to, is that they've sought out patent protection and they've put a stake in the ground, so to speak, that this is our invention. Do not go into this territory because we're seeking the U.S. patent protection for that.
And there are a number of other reasons. I like to ask people, what do you want your patent to do for you? And I've seen people who want a patent as kind of a vanity device, something they can put on their wall and say, gee, look at here, I got a patent. Another is an engineer or an inventor who wants to put something into their curriculum vitae, their CV or their resume to impress somebody for that they are an inventor for seeking a new job. Another is a reward that companies give to their employees for coming up with inventions. They'll get a patent for them, and if they have a patent, that's a measure of that it's actually an invention, and then they give them some monetary award, $500 or $1,000 or some amount of money. Myrna just discussed the barrier to competition, but then there are also people who come up who have a great idea but know that they cannot really make and use the invention, and the only way to monetize that invention would be to license it to others who do have the factory or the capability resources to make and use and sell the invention. Another is kind of a marketing device. You might want to have a patent. If your product says, as Myrna said, patent pending or patented, obviously it must be much better than the competition's if it's been patented.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. I'm here speaking with patent attorneys Myrna Schelling and Ron Rohde. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number to us in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're outside of the local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And we were just talking about the value of a patent and some of the things people do with patents. I don't know if I gave you a chance to finish.
There was one more, and that's something Myrna was discussing earlier, and that's perhaps you'd like to talk about trading and bargaining chips.
That's definitely something that we should talk about. When you're having a patent portfolio, you're trying to develop a patent portfolio, one of the things that you're going to be thinking about is, well, what if my competitor, my worst enemy, is going to come after me with their patents? What do I have to offer? And that would be your patent portfolio. In other words, sometimes money is not necessarily the only exchange you want in the pre-litigation or litigation stage. Oftentimes, people will want to say, hey, I will go ahead and let you license my technology if you'll do the same thing for your patents. And you won't have anything to bargain chip in that type of discussion unless you get some patents of your own on your own technology. So that's definitely a key thing. The one thing I also wanted to mention is, and this question often comes up with our clients, is do I have to actually come up with a prototype in order to file my patent? And the answer is no. You just have to have the problem and the solution itself of what you're trying to solve, and it has to be novel and non-obvious. In other words, you don't have to build something in order to get a patent.
So you use the phrase key, and it sounds from what you're saying that sometimes getting your own patent isn't only to protect what you've got, but it's the key to getting what somebody else has got.
Absolutely. The other thing you have to think about also is that patents are a wonderful intangible asset that you can use to convince investors to invest in your company and to jack up the valuation of your company. It's probably one of the fastest ways that you can do as a startup to grow your business, to get to the next level. Perhaps that's an exit strategy or what have you. But in terms of the bargaining aspect that Ron was talking about, having something, hopefully it's a couple of patents, in order to say to your closest competitor who's threatening litigation, hey, buddy, I have something here also that, you know, we should have a discussion here, and that not necessarily in the courtroom. Let's talk about whether or not we can have a deal here, usually in the form of a licensing deal. That's usually one of the reasons why people file for patents.
Yeah, in fact, I was involved in some litigation that ended with a cross-licensing deal between two competitors that each had issued patents that they were able to bargain with.
So we'll be back in a moment, and I want to start asking you some more practical questions, such as not why you would want a patent, but maybe some of the reasons you wouldn't want a patent. We'll talk about those in a minute, and some recent events and how they might have influenced the decision to go forward with the patent. But it being the week that it is, I would like to remind all of our listeners that you're the reason that we're here. You're the reason that we keep the show going. So I'd like to turn it over in a moment to Joanne so that she can address you. We'll be back in just a moment.
We are listening to the burglar deterrent home protection device invented by Ron Rohde, one of our guests on Your Legal Rights. You turn it on when you're away from home, and it keeps the intruders away. It's novel and non-obvious. Question is, can it be patented? Those are the kinds of questions that come up all the time on Your Legal Rights. Can my invention be patented, or should it be patented? If Your Legal Rights has been helpful to you, If it's given you some guidance on your invention, let us know. Give us a call in support of your legal rights by calling our pledge line at 800-525-9917, 800-KALW-917. We are in the final days of KALW's fall membership campaign, and this is the last time we'll be asking for your support during your legal rights. So step it up. Become part of this membership community that brings you unique and non-obvious programs like Your Legal Rights. $50 is all it takes to become a member of KALW. If you can afford a little more, think about becoming a sustaining member. At $5, $10, $20 a month, you choose the level of your support. That's 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. And thanks. Back to you, Jeff.
Thank you. And while we're talking about unique and not obvious, I'd like to take a moment to remind you, we've been doing this for well over 30 years in this program. I was happy to take the program over when it was handed to me by our good friend Chuck Finney. I'd like you to all think about donating to KALW as I have in Chuck's name. Let's keep his program going, his dream alive. He does it. He did it for you for so many years. And with that, I'd like to return to our discussion about some of the dangers posed by a patent. Is there a danger posed by the application itself?
Yes. Well, that depends on what you want to do with your invention. If you want to keep it a secret, a trade secret, and keep it indefinitely, protect it indefinitely as a trade secret, then filing a patent application can destroy the secrecy of the trade secret because, we said earlier, a patent is a bargain between you and the government that you're going to disclose everything that's necessary to make and use the invention in exchange for a right to exclude others from doing that for a limited period of time. On the other hand, you may want to keep it as a trade secret. Another problem is that if you apply for a patent and disclose how to make and use it, and then for whatever reason it's not allowed, then you've just shown everybody how to compete better with you.
But that being said, most patent applications are published within 18 months from the time that they're filed. So let's say that you don't get a patent, Ron. What ends up happening is that your patent will now become a published patent application, which can be used as prior art for other people's patent applications to be used against theirs. So in other words, you can exclude others from possibly going into your space, even if you don't get a patent, because you've publicly disclosed some of the secret sauce, so to speak, in that area. The other thing that we might want to mention is that if you have a concern about not providing everything under the sun, so to speak, to the world, one tactic you might want to consider is maybe perhaps, let's say that I have a really great idea. Many people try to file an umbrella patent application, and what they do is they try to put quite a few ideas in there. Another tactic, though, that many patent attorneys do, and I definitely do this, is I try to ask the inventors, okay, perhaps what we need to do is consider filing some patent applications that we do go forward with, and then some applications we may decide, okay, we'll take a look at that in 1 year. And that's the difference between a provisional application and a U.S. non-provisional patent application. In other words, when you file a provisional patent application, if you decide not to go forward with it, the public's not going to know. Whereas with a non-provisional patent application, it will get published. So therefore, the world will know. That's the distinction between those two.
Well, also, it turns out that you can request that a non-publication, you can submit a non-publication request with the application, and that will prevent it from being disclosed in a publication. At the end of the prosecution, if you don't have a patent, it becomes as if it never was and nobody ever does see it. The downside of that is that it also limits you if you want to go into other countries, then you cannot submit a non-publication request.
That is true.
Now, you mentioned about going into other countries or keeping a patent U.S. only. And I did want to ask you about patent protections when it goes outside of our borders. What are some considerations? Why would I want to keep it limited to the U.S. if I might have other protections elsewhere? What are some things I'd want to consider?
Definitely your budget, because when you try to file for foreign rights, it can get very costly. So that's one factor. Another factor you might want to consider is there is, in different countries, they have different deadlines. So, for instance, the U.S., you can file a patent application 1 year from any sale, offer for sale, or public disclosure. Other countries are not so forgiving. For instance, in Europe, traditionally, if you have a public disclosure, you don't get to have a patent application in Europe. It will never be a valid patent. So it just depends, and also in your, not only your budget, but also your circumstances. Have you disclosed your patent idea, patentable idea, in a trade show, for instance? That's considered a public disclosure, any disclosure outside of a non-disclosure agreement.
So a rule of thumb for deciding whether or not you even want to go into other countries is, do you have $5 to $10 million or more business or sales, expected sales for that product? Another indicator might be if you're manufacturing in a foreign country, you may want to obtain a patent in that country to prevent the factory from selling your product out the back door at night while they're making the product for you in the daytime. Another is that if you have some kind of a contractual obligation with a foreign distributor to have it patent protection in that country. So these are some of the things you want to consider. But as Myrna said, it becomes extremely expensive to go into other countries. And then if you do, then you want to decide whether you want to go in via the Patent Cooperation Treaty or the Paris Convention.
Is there some kind of an international standard by which you know that here's at least a baseline to get a patent everywhere?
Well, the definitely the rule of thumb is try to file a patent application before any disclosure or sale. And that way then you can keep all your foreign filing options alive, so to speak. So once you once you're thinking about having a trade show or you're going to discuss this outside of a NDA, go talk to your patent attorney and say, hey, I'm actually interested in filing for U.S. protection, but I want to keep my foreign filing options alive. How can I do that? And then the patent attorney can help you with that. There is, as Ron mentioned, the Patent Cooperation Treaty, which is a wonderful way to have a basically a placeholder patent application that allows you to later in time defer the decision of making the decision of which countries to go into, because each country will charge you typically not only the filing costs and the patent application costs, but also possibly annuities. Annuities is like every year to keep your patent application alive, you have to pay that, that foreign country's patent office some type of fee. So it can get very costly, and that's the reason why many of our clients decide to do a PCT application just to keep their foreign filing options alive, because that allows you to defer that decision for quite a bit of time for lesser money.
On the other hand, if you really want to go into a country and you know that you want to go there, you may want to just go directly there via the Paris Convention treaty.
So, for example, if I come up with this great new device that's going to make all of our cell phones obsolete, under their current marketing scheme, at least under the way that things are manufactured today, I'd probably be best off patenting in China pretty quickly, because that's the cheap place for me to manufacture it. And of course, things may change.
And China's one of those countries that is not a part of the Patent Cooperation Treaty, so you'd have to file directly.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and I am here in the studio speaking with patent attorneys Ron Rohde and Myrna Schelling. If you have questions for my guests, our phone number here in the studio is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Don't be shy about calling us. Nobody's going to ask you any questions that you can't answer. If you are outside of the local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And we've been talking about patents and the protection of patents beyond our borders. And that begs the question, given our current political posture, what might be changing out there? Do some of our recent events or some of our saber-rattling abroad jeopardize the protections of some of these patents?
I haven't seen so much of that overseas. I haven't seen too much about patents in the saber-rattling and the tariffs, though in some respects the imposition of tariffs, if you look into the nitty-gritty legalities, was triggered by some unfair patent treatment in China. So I just ran across an article on that recently.
Ron, as you were saying, no, Myrna, you were nodding your head yes. Do you have a different experience about that or some different insights about where this might be going?
Well, honestly, I think that when it comes to the foreign rights versus U.S. rights, certainly the U.S. is coming towards having a commonality with what are international rights. For instance, we've gone from first to invent to first to file. And that was not the case a couple of years ago. Now we're like the Europeans. We have to, if you have an idea, you have to go in and file as soon as possible. But when it comes to the political scheme, I don't think that there's any bearing I can see so far. That certainly doesn't mean that it can't be used. But I do see, though, an increase on the patent office fees. And that's actually a controversy right now. Is what are you doing with our patent fees? Where's the money going? So that's definitely in the political scheme. That's what I was nodding my head about.
And Ron, you mentioned that China's not a party to the Paris Treaty. Can you give us a little information about what you mean by that?
I think that was Myrna who mentioned that.
Actually, it's the Patent Cooperation Treaty. The Patent Cooperation Treaty allows a patent application, an applicant to decide which countries of the 130-plus countries I wish to go and validate and try to seek protection after this placeholder application is filed. The thing is, though, that not all the countries in the world are a party to that. So there are quite a few countries in which you can't go into that country, so to speak, and from PCT, and so therefore you have to file directly. Taiwan is one as well. But I believe that, for instance, many people decide they'll file the PCT application and then they'll go to various other countries like Europe.
I wanted to clarify a little bit. What typically happens is somebody files a patent application in the U.S., and then they have 1 year from the day of filing to decide whether or not to file what's called a PCT or Patent Cooperation Treaty application. They file the Patent Cooperation Treaty. Usually it's just a copy of the U.S. application. And in the receiving office, in our case in the U.S., and that's what then goes into the system and becomes a placeholder, is that copy of the original application in the U.S. So that's what typically happens. Now, there are other ways to do this. You can file a PCT first and then enter the U.S. a year and a half later, and some people actually do that. So there are a number of ways to do that. But it's essentially, for the most part, a copy. That PCT application is a copy of what you filed in your home country, in our case in the U.S., and for somebody who files an application in Europe, they would file in their receiving office in Europe and then bring that PCT application into the U.S.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. We're speaking to patent attorneys Myrna Schelling and Ron Rohde. Ron is also a patent holder in addition to being a patent attorney. In a moment, we'll be back, and we can ask Ron the question, what came first, the patent or the attorney? But this is Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. If you have questions for my guests, patent attorneys, patent holders, arbitrators, whomever it may be that you have a question for tonight, please feel free to call us. In San Francisco, our number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or if you're calling from outside of the local dialing area, please call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. We spoke a little bit about your patent, Ron. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your experience?
All right. My actual patent is not the safety sounds audio that Joanne was playing for us earlier. That was perhaps an illustration of an alternative form of IP protection, which we could perhaps talk about later. The patent that I received was on a method for winding coils in a electron beam lithography system that would result in constant power being run through the coils at many different lens focal lengths for the lenses. And there were other applications for but that was fundamentally what it was.
And let me say, anybody out there listening who understood what Ron just said is probably in an income bracket where you should seriously consider keeping this program, keeping this station afloat. It is a pledge week. Our number here, if you wish to donate, is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. You won't end up on the air. It's completely safe. And I know that they have incentives for you to call that are far better. But if you understand things like that, money's probably not an object.
I
could explain it in more detail, but then that would take up the rest of the program and two more programs.
I think I need the drawings for that.
Yes, you would need the drawings.
Which I probably couldn't read. But you started to allude to other types of protections, other types of of intellectual property protections than patents.
Yeah, this goes back to your original one of your earlier questions as to whether or not somebody really, or when somebody should come and see us, see a patent attorney. There are other forms of intellectual property protection. Now, there are the big three. There's copyrights, trademarks, trade secrets, which we could discuss later. But there are also some others, and one of them is first to market. Safety sounds was an example of first to market. We had this idea where we made recordings of sounds which made it sound like people were in their home, that the barking dog was just one track of many. And you heard in the background as Joanne was pitching the pledge, you heard the sound of people doing dishes or flushing the toilet. In fact, I put this in a rental that I had, and I had some renters come to take a look at it, decide whether or not they wanted to rent it, and they called me up and they said, "There's somebody in there. Should we call the police?" I said, no, that's my burglar deterrent system, and that's what we called it. In fact, that was a pledge gift on Chuck's show on earlier times.
You know, when you talk about a patent and we talk about exposing secrets and hopefully people honor it and hopefully you get your patent, but I guess in a situation like you just described with the tenants, you tell them it's there for protection. Aren't you encouraging squatters when you disable that, at least for those individuals?
Well, I don't know about that, but back to my point about alternative IP, the idea there was we had an idea, we were the first to market it, and it pretty much became obsolete in the time it would have taken to apply for a patent and get a patent issued. So that's one of the things you want to decide is how long – what's the likely lifetime of your patent? If it's going to become obsolete before you're even likely to get a patent, then probably a patent is not a way to go.
Before you go further, let me ask if I understand that correctly, because we've all lived through times where it seemed there was a pet rock or something every week. And we're not getting bombarded with products as fast as we were maybe 15 years ago, 10 years ago when the TV would broadcast something new. Mm-hmm. But if I understand your point and what you were just saying, there's a lot of times you want to manufacture it quickly, get in, get out, and move on rather than taking the time and expense to try to protect something.
Yeah, the pet rock was an excellent example of that also. There's also other forms of intellectual property protection. For example, the good housekeeping seal of approval. This is sort of a quasi or a pseudo-governmental organization that blesses your product and says that it's likely to be a good product. Others are the FDA. You have to go through their procedures in order to get a drug approved, in addition to patents. So that's another governmental organization that gives you the right to market your product and others can't. So there are a number of these governmental organizations that approve products. The Underwriters Laboratory is another one. If you get Underwriters Laboratory, then you're ahead of everybody else when you come out with your product, and it's going to take somebody maybe 6 months to a year to catch up with you, during which time they can't market their product because they don't have the Underwriter Laboratory seal of approval. So there are these governmental organizations that certify your products as being safe or effective or useful or safely good for the environment, things like that. The California Air Resources Board is another one. You can't market an engine in California unless you have CARB approval. And it takes maybe a year or 2 years to get CARB approval. So these are all forms of alternative intellectual property protection.
I think we should probably talk a little bit about why you would want to file something as a patent and whether or not you could file it something as a trade secret versus a trademark, maybe, perhaps?
Yeah, we mentioned trade secrets again.
So maybe we should discuss that a little bit further. So one thing you might want to consider is the patent protection the way to go? Because that's really basically generally 20 years of protection for utility patents. Design patents, it's 14 years. So if you have an idea, for instance, that you want to keep for a long time, longer than 20 years, one thing you might want to consider is just keep it as a trade secret, and meaning only those who absolutely must know have access to that trade secret. And so therefore, you would not want to file a patent application on that. Another thing that you might want to consider is a utility patent the only thing I need to file for a product? For instance, your product may be such that it has a utility, it has a use, it has a solution to a technical problem, but also perhaps the casing itself might be protectable. Maybe the ornamental design, the feature, or maybe perhaps the GUI of your software presentation might be of interest. And certainly, if you're thinking, well, this is a software product and I'm only going to have perhaps 10, 20 years anyway on it, we're going to file a patent application. That would be the way to go. But if, on the other hand, you're Coca-Cola, you're probably not going to file a patent application. You're just going to keep that as a trade secret and hopefully never have to discuss that in litigation, hence the secret aspect.
Another form of intellectual property protection is the trademark. And that protects the identity of the source of a product. It doesn't protect any of the function of the product or anything like that, but it tells people who makes the product. And Coca-Cola is another example. Coca-Cola is a trademark, and it tells people that they're not getting a Pepsi. So Pepsi could not market their product under Coca-Cola and steal the identity. It's sort of like preventing identity theft of manufacturers.
Of course, one of them could come up with a new formula, Pepsi, a new formula Coke, and make it taste a lot like the other one. But
they can't use the Coca-Cola name to convince people to buy it. So, again, it's trademarks will protect the identity of the source of a product, and trademarks will last can potentially last indefinitely, as can trade secrets.
One thing you mentioned in passing is the copyright. And most of us think about copyrights when we think about books or music or sometimes the higher learnings, the higher aspects of life. But how does copyright law apply to products such as software or the like? Or does it?
Okay. The answer is yes, it does apply to software. But it would apply to the how would you describe that?
It's probably like the sound of a software program is one possibility. Another possibility is the technical manuals, then the user manuals itself. You would want to copyright those.
You can also copyright the source code itself.
Absolutely, so. But then that means you're putting out that source code for everyone to see. Obviously, so.
And by the way, you can also copyright buildings and statutes, things like that. But what a copyright protects is the artistic expression. Again, you can't use it to protect the function of something, only the way it looks, a photograph, as you mentioned. And it protects, the protection it gives you is you can prevent somebody from making a copy of that artistic expression. So to the extent that a software program has code in it, the source code that's written, you can actually copyright that source code.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and while you've been very good at calling the station to put forward your donations, and again, for those who have yet to do so and are waiting, the number there is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917, or online at kalw.org. For the rest of you that have already finished that task, feel free to call us here. Here in the studio, we will be happy to answer your questions. Our number here is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134, or toll free at 866-798-8255. And again, for those outside the local dialing area, 866-798-8255. And we're speaking to patent attorneys Myrna Schelling and Ron Rohde. We're talking about patents, and now we're talking about all sorts of intellectual property. And I guess one question that comes to mind, you start seeing things in copyright law or patent law about things such as look and feel, when something's maybe not the same, but it kind of sounds close or it reminds you of something. Does that come under all these different forms of protection where that's a danger now?
I think maybe you're referring to trademark law where you have the look and feel. And the idea of trademark is that you're protecting somebody from you want somebody not to mistake there's this likelihood of confusion, I guess is the best way to put it, of somebody's trademark with somebody else's trademark. And if you have a product that where the trademark would induce somebody to think it was somebody else's product, then there's can be a trademark infringement there.
And we'll circle back to that in just a moment. I also see that there's calls that are on their way to us right now. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW FM 91.7 in San Francisco. And Sam in Santa Clara will be back to you in just a moment. We will be back right after this.
And you're listening to Your Legal Rights on 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And we are at the tail end of KALW's fall membership campaign. The drive will end this Friday. And this is the last time we'll be asking for your support during Your Legal Rights at 800-525-9917, 800-KALW-917, or online at kalw.org. Our goal for this hour of Your Legal Rights is eight of you calling in right now at 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. KALW is a unique and non-obvious station. It's the only station in the Bay Area that brings you Your Legal Rights every week. And the reason why we can bring you Your Legal Rights is because we are public radio. We are listener-supported. And that means we have the freedom to devote a whole hour to an in-depth discussion on patents and inventions. Where else are you going to hear a discussion on this wonky kind of topic? You're not going to hear this on commercial radio or non-commercial radio. And KALW deserves your support. 800-525-9917, 800-KALW-917, or online at kalw.org. And back to you, Jeff.
And back to you, Sam in Santa Clara. You are on Your Legal Rights.
Maybe one comment I need.
Sorry, Sam, you were cut off. If you could start over. And okay, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Sure, thank you. I have a couple questions. My first one is, if I have a U.S. provisional patent application and I am about to file a second provisional patent application, can the second provisional patent application claim priority from the first provisional patent application? That's one question. My second question is about the PCT. If I have a PCT application, I earlier heard you guys talk about Taiwan in specific being one of the non-signatories to the treaty, and what needs to happen? If I have a PCT application, what do I need to do to file a patent in Taiwan?
Sam, thank you for both those questions. It looks like my guests are ready to jump on them, and I appreciate you taking your answer on the air. And we'll turn it over to you two. Do you have answers for Sam?
Okay. So Sam is asking about a provisional patent application. We should probably describe that a little bit more carefully. A provisional patent application is one of those applications that actually the inventor could prepare. It's an informal description. It doesn't have to have a claim. It is good for 1 year. It's really just a placeholder. You don't get any rights out of it other than proving that you had the invention as of the date of the provisional patent application. Now, if you have a first patent, and this happens a lot where people come up with an invention, they'll file a provisional patent application, then they come up with an improvement on the provisional or on the original provision, and they file a second provisional patent application. You cannot claim priority in a second provisional to the first provisional, and you don't really need to. What you do is when you file the non-provisional patent application, you claim priority to both the first provisional patent application and the second provisional patent application. So you just kind of sweep those two together, and you have that entire disclosure in the first and second provisional patent application is incorporated into your non-provisional patent application. So I hope that answers your question, Sam, if you're still listening. As far as I believe it was, I'll let Myrna take the PCT in Taiwan.
I think, Sam, your question was if you were interested in filing in Taiwan, and since Taiwan is not a PCT member state, what can you do? You can file directly to Taiwan using probably a Taiwanese foreign associate. You can file for patent protection, assuming that the laws allow you to do so in that particular country. And typically what you can expect is you can provide them with a copy of your patent application that hopefully you have filed in the U.S., provide it to the foreign associate in Taiwan and have it directly filed there, thereby bypassing the PCT application process. And you can expect that depending on the foreign countries involved, you can find out it from the foreign associate, do you have to pay annual fees, so to speak, called annuities, to keep your patent application alive while it's going through the patent prosecution process to get your patent. Hope that answers your question.
Sam, thank you for asking those questions. And it's just that kind of legal advice you won't get elsewhere. That's why we ask you to help defray the cost. Keep us on the air at KALW.org or by calling in 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Alex from Hayward, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thank you. When you're looking for when you have an idea and then you want to see if it's out there, and you know you're tempted to go ahead and Google it, if you will, how is that prevented from being stolen at Google headquarters? You know, they look at that, you know, because they look at everything you do, of course. Do you follow what I'm saying?
If I understand you correctly, what you're asking is, how can you perform even the most rudimentary search before turning over to the experts and not give it away to somebody like Google, who's monitoring your keystrokes, if not just your entire search?
And protect yourself at the same time, if possible.
Well, if you're concerned about that, you can go to uspto.gov and use their search engine. Trust me, they have no interest in monitoring what you're doing or stealing your invention from you. They're going to make money on your patent application, not your invention.
I see. Good, 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 good. Thank you very much.
Alex, thank you for joining us. Okay. Leslie from Oakland, you're on Your Legal Rights.
Hi there. This is Leslie.
Hi, Leslie. You're on Your Legal Rights. If you could turn down your radio, we seem to have a little feedback.
Okay, hang on. Sorry, but I had my I didn't have the radio on at all. I had a set of earphones in. But hi,
welcome.
Hi. So I'm a performer doing a satire with a ukulele. I have a very clever name, and it just so happens that there's a gentleman that's been doing it much longer over in Hawaii who occasionally visits for tours to California. He also has a ukulele. He also is doing satire. What should I do to protect myself?
Are you trying to protect your group name? Is that what it is?
Yeah, and all the merchandising and the recordings and so forth is definitely a possibility of confusion. I don't believe he's trademarked at all, so I was thinking of getting the jump on him and doing a trademark for at least for California.
Absolutely. Well, consider this, that when it comes to trademark applications, what you're seeking is for all U.S. trademark law, so all U.S. territory, not just simply California. You can do that. And typically what happens is once you file your trademark application, part of that application you say which classification you're trying to get the protection under. And so obviously yours will be for musical performances utilizing satire and ukulele. But more importantly, once you seek that protection, what happens is the examiner who's examining your trademark application will see, you know, is there anything that comes remotely close to that, and will check the registry, what they call the registry in trademark applications, to see if anyone else has previously filed. So if he has not filed, you certainly will want to file a trademark application. But that being said, though, there are, and maybe perhaps Ron can even jump in on this too, there is the possibility that if you don't get a U.S. trademark, you might just simply get the mark, so to speak, just for the state or even the particular states that you're seeking and using the mark, so to speak. And that's more of a common law type of thing.
Well, there many of the states have their own trademark rules. But I want to circle back a little bit. A trademark is something that you have on the day you start using it in interstate commerce. That is, you have a trademark on your name. What you're doing at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office is you're registering your trademark. You're not getting a trademark. You're registering your trademark, which serves as notice to everybody in the U.S., if not the universe or at least the galaxy, that you are the owner of that trademark and you are the source of that service or those goods.
Leslie, I hope that answered your question.
So go and register your trademark.
I think it did. Is there any chance that if it's not... I'm a little confused. Okay, so just very quickly, there's a chance that it might not be granted, or it's just a registration, so there's no chance that it won't be granted?
Well, there's a chance that the registration won't be granted. But what I'm trying to say is that you now have a trademark. Whether or not you get protection for that trademark depends on whether or not you register the trademark to provide notice to everybody. And what the process, the application process is a registration process, and whether or not they will register or not register your trademark depends on following the rules of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
Does that then protect me from encroachment from the other guy who might say, hey, there's a major confusion, you know, SEOs are listing you and people are migrating to the wrong site, I'm losing money.
You can't trademark his name just because he's already been out there and he's been using it. So if you have a name that is very much like his and there's a likelihood of confusion between your name and his.
No, it's identical.
Oh, they're identical.
Yes.
I would suggest that you talk to a trademark attorney because I think that goes beyond the scope of what we're talking about here.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you, Leslie, and you as well. Thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. We're nearing the end of the hour. There was one caller who did not want to talk on the air but did leave us the following question. If the Patent and Trademark Office is swamped and overburdened with too many patent applications, shouldn't there be a way of weeding out the frivolous applications quickly so they don't monopolize so much staff time? Should the Patent and Trademark Office have its time wasted by an application for a patent on, say, a flame-throwing trumpet?
Well, I first of all object to the premise of the question. I think that's incorrect. First of all, the patent and trademark is not overwhelmed and overburdened. In fact, recently the Patent and Trademark Office has been reducing its time to patent considerably. There are some art units, there are some areas in the patent office that are taking longer than others. But in general, even their lead time is shortened down from – it used to be about 8 years in the software patents. It's down to about – we're getting first office actions now instead of after 8 years. We're getting them down to about, what, a year and a half, 2 years. So also, you know, the fact is the Patent and Trademark Office makes money from all of these frivolous applications. Because in the form of application fees.
And noting that they subsidize the rest of us will be the last note we have in that. We have about a minute left if you each want to take a few seconds and any last parting thoughts you have before we move on.
Well, I'll just enlarge on that, what I was saying there for a moment, and that is that the patent and trademark is a self-supporting or part of the government. It's not supported by our taxes, but by the application fees. So I think they're pretty good at protecting themselves from flame-throwing trumpets.
I would just encourage inventors that if they do have an idea, please go and talk to your patent attorney. Even if you think that you've looked at the prior art, go talk to your patent attorney and explore your options.
You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden, and our topic tonight has been Patent Law 101. My guests tonight have been attorney, pilot, arbitrator, patent-holding inventor, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto, and Myrna Schelling, senior counsel at Carr & Farrell LLP in Menlo Park. Thank you both for joining us, and a special thank you to the barking dog. We'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights, where we'll be discussing employment law with Maggie Grover from Oakland, Ellen Mendelson, and Douglas Robbins from San Francisco. In addition, I'm happy to announce the return of our Call a Lawyer Night feature, so that whether you choose to speak on the air or privately, you can have attorneys awaiting your call. Again, you're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. Our thanks to you for listening, to our production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.